Hello. You're listening to What the Fuck Do We Know? Okay, we're back from getting that drink. It was a really long way to the bar and back to the studio or room. We were talking about meaning of life, meaning in life, meaningfulness in the last episode, and we're just going to continue in this episode because we didn't want it to go too long for the listeners.
Right, because this is the kind of topic that you make an entire season of.
Right. Actually, you know, we could do like episode 1, 2, 3, have a whole mini series of meaning in life. Okay.
That's kind of pretentious. Okay.
Where were we? So let's continue with meaningfulness. And we read a book a while ago. Both of us read this book, although I think I read it longer. No, like I read more of the book than he did because it's very common that you don't finish books.
I finish usually.
Where? Okay.
Wherever I am allowed.
Okay. It's disgusting because I'm in your apartment. Susan Wolf was talking about meaning in life, and her first statement was, let me just get it here so I don't butcher it.
So are we talking about meaningfulness as a psychological?
Yeah, meaningfulness. Yes, meaningfulness.
Thing.
So she says, meaning arises from loving objects worthy of love and engaging with them in a positive way. So the idea is that a person's life can be meaningful only if they care deeply about something or things, and only if they are like interested and engaged in it, and not just only, although I already said only if, but the person could love something and be engaged in something but still not have meaning if the thing is not worth meaning. So it goes on to talk, it goes on to talk about objective worth. So she's basically saying that to create meaning in life, you do something that you have to love what you're doing. You have to be engaged in it. And this thing has to create objective, has to have objective worth, objective value, so to speak. There are many problems with this statement, right?
I can agree with this with some caveats. So I do think that a lot of people think that there are objective values, right? And for a lot of people, that brings meaning.
Right.
So, although I don't think there are objective values, a lot of people believe there are objective values.
You don't think so? In the first episode, we talked about life as a value, like valuing life.
Yes. I don't think there are objective values. But, okay, my problem with nihilism, which says that there are not only objective values, but even a person... Like existentialism says that a person can create their own values and live according to them. Nihilism says that, at least one version of it, says that even a person individually can't make a consistent system, moral framework that would make any sense and be true to them. And I think my problem with that is that it's just impossible to live nihilism, because with any decision, conscious decision that you make, you already have some implicit value assigned to something. You waking up in the morning, you choosing to eat, you already assigned some value to either not wanting to die, so to life, or you assigned some negative value to suffering. You didn't want to suffer from hunger. You make a decision, it already implies that there is some value there. Value in the broader sense of the word, not like moral value, but some value.
Okay, but do you think a nihilist is talking about value in the broader sense of the word?
I think it makes sense I think that even in this specific case, like with eating, it is still a value. It can be reduced to life or not suffering, which is a value.
But it's also like I'm hungry. Well, we talked about a little bit about how people process, like when we talked about anxiety over death, You talked about people connecting every kind of anxiety that they have towards a fear of dying. And you said you don't think that people... Oh, I'm sorry. I just realized.
Go ahead.
Sorry, I just realized as you looked at me. Okay, but you know what I'm talking about.
No, I don't. Go ahead.
Okay, but I'll go back to the value. I don't think that, but when you say that if you go deeper, you can find like a value of life, of being alive, or a value of not against suffering, right? Do you think that these people have a conscious understanding of that?
No.
So if they don't have a conscious understanding of that, can you say that they have chosen a value? They have lived they're living a life according to a value, but if they're not consciously making that decision.
Yeah, but you still have it. You're not being conscious about it. Doesn't mean that you don't have it.
But if I asked you, you wouldn't say that you had this value.
I think if you draw attention to this and like build this argument the way I did, I think that most people would acknowledge it.
I don't think so. But especially if the person is a nihilist, the person would just would deny it. The person calls themselves a nihilist, the person would deny it. But I want to go back to value and objectivity. You said you don't think that it's a thing that can exist, right? Objective value. That's what you said.
Objective, yeah. Yeah, but subjectively, question, I do think
sure,
that...
I understand. But the question I want to ask is, what do you consider to define this objective? Everybody in the world?
Define the subjective.
Yes, when you say objective value, what do you think for it to be objective? What is involved in like everybody in the world, or in a society, a majority in a community, or what do you think?
No, when I say objective, I think, okay, let's take an example from science. Mm-hmm. I think more science. There is universe, I don't know, a planet is the shape. I don't know, what is the shape of a planet?
It's oval or spherical, I don't know,
it's
round?
Spheroid, I think it's spheroid. And it is there no matter what people think, is the way it is. The universe is expanding no matter what people think about it.
So objectiveness is regardless of people's
yes.
opinions, thoughts,
yes.
feelings. But there are things that are like that are physical, what you're talking about. And then there are things that are not necessarily physical, right?
Like what?
Okay, I don't know. In terms of like speaking of value, like this, okay, freedom of choice, freedom of speech, would you say it has objective value?
No.
Why not?
Because values, they are not objective. No value has, it's no value is objective because it doesn't,
so
it exists in people's head.
I see. Okay.
It's objective in the way that there are physical brains,
so it's
and there
impossible
are people who believe in
to
it.
To have an objective thing that is value because
yes.
it's formed by people's heads. But we govern our society by what we call objective values. So how do we get there then?
Because we believe in things that don't exist.
So you don't agree. But do you then agree with the things that have been considered values in your society? For example, the right to life for everyone, or the right to not be killed?
Yeah, I agree. I can go further and say that I want to live in a society that has works according to these rules. But at the same time, even if I want everyone to think that it is an objective value, because that it's more convincing, you know, that nihilism, still I can't, it's still not the truth the way I see it. So I can't deny it.
I just think that when a lot of people talk about objectivity, they have such strict definitions around it. I just think it's impossible to get absolute objectivity in our world.
On values, yes.
Yes, on values. So we have to go, when we say objective, and I think what I'm going to speak for her about what the woman here was talking about was in some sort of, like a majority of people agree on this.
Then use a different word. Use the majority of people think this, not that it is objectively true.
That is, but the thing is that you don't want to use that. But in our society, in most of our world, people call objective things what majority of people agree with. So people would say objectively, it is bad to kill because most people have agreed now that it is bad to kill.
No, I think people say that because they think that this is really objectively, in my definition of the word, is bad. This is like bad energy. This is universe works this the way. This is a feature of universe that killing is bad.
I don't think so. Not so long ago, people were having duels.
And?
Killing each other. They didn't really...
Oh, that was for an honorable reason.
So people... And people support the death penalty. So...
People support killing each other on the war.
Right. So I don't think that people think that, like, in some kind of energy way or some kind of supernatural way or something, that killing is bad. I think they agree. We've agreed as a society because we want to live in a place where people don't just get killed on the street, that killing is bad. And that is objective. That's an objective value. Not because that, not in your definition, because it couldn't ever be.
So what is subjective then?
Subjective?
Yeah. Objective is just...
Subjective, I'm trying to speak for general public when I think I'm right when I say, when people say subjective is very individual.
Okay. Well, so like when only you... Yeah. Or like a bunch of people
believe in it. It's a really small like thing. Yeah.
So is love objective or subjective?
I think a lot of people would say objective because they believe that it exists for everybody.
I would say most people would say it's subjective because everyone experiences it in their own way.
But the thing is, everybody experiences it. That's what they believe. They believe everyone experiences it. But I don't think that people go into
this is semantics. Okay, I don't believe in objective values. In my definition, I do believe there are almost universal values, and most likely because it does have some genetic foundation behind it, or maybe even cultural for sure, but probably genetic too. And also people are more or less the same in terms of how their brain works, in terms of their genetic codes. So it makes sense that there are some universal things. But we just see so much variability across different cultures that I just don't see how you cannot be on board with like cultural relativism.
So you don't agree with Susan Wolf?
Maybe I don't. I don't.
Yeah, but she also says something about doing something that you love that helps bring meaning to your life. I can agree with her because a lot of people, when they think about like getting a legacy or having worth or, you know, leaving this earth with something, they always think about doing something big enough that it is noticed, you know, by many people. And that's how people find value in their life. It's usually by leaving a legacy, by doing something that is noticeable for the people. Then I don't remember totally, but in her book, she does make an example of someone who keeps ants. I don't remember fully, but if the person loves doing this, I can totally see how this is a valuable action for the person. And going home every day from work and having to, I don't know what people do when they keep ants because I think it's a disgusting thing to do. But
I wanted to do it.
Yeah, I wouldn't visit here at all.
It's too complicated. And they go to sleep in winter, so it's boring.
Yeah, well, but doing this and being satisfied by this action does give you some kind of meaning in life. It does make your life some kind of valuable because you just look forward to doing this thing. It brings you joy. It makes you feel like you're doing something. I don't know. Maybe.
I think it's very hard to argue with this point. That basically experiencing positive and no emotions subjectively, that contributes to having a meaningful life.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think anyone can argue with that. Well, some people can because there are no universal arguments. But I think you made a point about leaving a legacy and being a part of some bigger thing. I would distinguish those two because I think there is a difference between subjective, or we can draw a difference and it's useful, I think, between this subjective joy and like happiness. But it is kind of like internal and subjective, I think, in the way even she used this word. And then the other part, when you think about being a part of a bigger thing than you, this is about an objective, in your definition, value. You know that there is, I don't know, I like knitting, this is my thing, but then I contribute to the exploration of space, and this is, and for some people, I don't know, I like science, for some people this is an objective contribution to the entire society, something that the entire humanity should be doing, you know?
What's your point?
My point is that this is different from subjective pleasure.
Okay, I agree. But it's not, if you're talking about legacy and doing something, being a part of something big, I don't think that people leave legacies from subjective pleasure. I think that it's the same thing as being a part of something big. Because when people talk about leaving a legacy, they talk about leaving a legacy for people to notice. They want to be involved in something big enough that they kind of have a name imprinted and they want their name to continue. So it's not like doing something in my house, like painting my wall, or maybe that's actually being part of something big because I could contribute to art to art in general by that. But it's not something small. It's not something that I'm doing just for my pleasure. It's usually if I say I want to have a legacy, I'm saying I want to be part of something big. I don't think that those are different.
Are you saying that eventually, even if you do something for society, you still do it for yourself because you enjoy it? Or like
No. I'm talking about legacy now, but I'm not just talking about I'm not talking about enjoying or whatever, but I'm saying like, but first of all, yes, if you do something for society, you're not just doing it because you want society to be better. Maybe I am a cynic, but I don't think that people are just doing it because they want society to be better, but they're also doing it because they know they will be attached to this betterment of society. That's why people leave their names on things. And in that way, they have also made a legacy for themselves and they've become part of something big. That's what I am saying.
I agree that everyone does. There are no altruism, the way that is usually used, that you are doing something entirely for other people. Mm-hmm. This is just not true. You do it because something in your head works in the way that you have a need to do it, even if that means sacrificing your own life.
Right.
So in that way, altruism versus egoism doesn't make any sense because altruism just doesn't exist. But then you can still, I feel here it's actually useful to save this concept of altruism and say that, yes, I do everything for myself, but sometimes you do it and it only concerns your matters. And sometimes you actually bring some value to other people and through that you satisfy your need. And that we can call altruism.
We're talking about doing something external, just generally, not just for yourself, right? I don't think that it is possible for it to exist that I'm doing something for someone and I don't think about satisfying the need. Because that need...
Maybe you do. But I think that we should still save the term in this case and say that, okay, altruism, this is what we'll call altruism.
Sure. Okay, this is something we'll probably talk about in a different episode more fully. But I don't think that it exists, this altruism that you're talking about. I think that every good deed, every good deed, even if people don't want to accept it, there is something I want to do in my community in Nigeria that I consider is very good. And I want to do it and I want to help the people. But I also know that it's going to satisfy the need in me to be helpful to this community.
I agree.
So it's not just, I know that I will gain pleasure from that satisfaction of knowing that I've done that. And that is honestly, if we're going to be honest, and maybe I'm a cynic, but that is a bigger motivation for me than just doing the thing I want to do.
I disagree that everyone is conscious about it. But
I didn't say everyone is conscious about it. But
I agree that that's how it is. Well, my point was just that we should still call it altruism because the other definition of altruism is gone. And
okay,
why do you exist?
Why do we exist?
Why do you personally
exist? Why do I personally exist? Haven't we already covered this a little bit? No, we haven't.
I don't think. I'm not sure.
The drink was hard. Was strong. Well, wasn't hard. Okay. Why do I exist personally? I have no fucking idea. If I did, don't you think I'd be a happier person? But it's a big question. It's like when you say, why do you exist? Are you saying like, what is the reason I'm here for in terms of like, am I supposed to do something specifically? Or why did I just come into existence in terms of what was the precursor? What are you saying?
No, more like you wake up and you decide to do something. And like, why do you decide to keep the ball rolling?
Because I'm already here, and what else?
Yeah, I like that's what's when I fun? Ask myself this question. It's like myself. It's the first point that I like to make is that the baseline like scenario is already existing, so the burden of proof is on someone to prove that you should not exist, mm-hmm. because we didn't make a conscious choice to be born, but right now we already exist, and in order to stop existing, we need to make a conscious decision to commit a suicide or whatever.
Or we die by some other way, not by a hurt.
Yes, that's not something we can control.
Right.
And so for me, I think that this is the first thing that I just the honest answer. The baseline is that I already exist. Mm-hmm. Second, my life is not that insufferable for me to stop it.
Minus.
The next one is that I know that most likely eventually I will die, mm-hmm. or at least I will have a choice to end my life. So why should I do it now if I don't have a good, really good reason, if I can do it later?
I think that also something that I think about is that even if, honestly, I don't think that I'm experiencing the best kind of life, if there is some sort of best life that exists in this world that some people experience, I don't experience it right now. But I think maybe there is a, because I see people online, I see people that seem to be quite happy. I think one of the things that maybe keeps me going is just like, maybe it's possible to feel in some way extremely happy, or to feel like
that's also a good point.
You have,
you're relatively young.
Well, yeah, so maybe it's possible to actually feel really good existing, and there's a chance that I might feel it if I keep on going. So, why not just try?
See, our grounds of existence are quite shaky, wouldn't you say? It just feels like. I mean, isn't shaky? It's just, oh, I just exist because I already exist. And
no, but why is that shaky? Because like, what else? I exist because God put me here and God has a plan for me. What is that concrete on?
Well, it's not because we don't have any evidence for that. But psychologically, the foundation is much stronger there.
Okay, I agree. But generally, we know that we exist. And like we know that we exist there because we exist.
Yeah, but if you know that you exist and you just need to exist for a couple of decades and be a good boy or girl or non-binary person, and then like you go to heaven, or if you don't commit a suicide, and like our case when we already exist, so
I think
let's,
when
let's
you
see
are
where
non-binary
it's going.
Person, there's no heaven for you. So. I think we should start anything. First of all, let's clarify that. So let's not give some people hope.
I mean,
false hope.
No, God has been moving to left.
Who, God?
Yeah.
Don't blaspheme on this podcast, please. Thank you. I think that we shouldn't test. Okay, of course. No, I think psychologically it is better. It is much better.
What is better?
Being like believing in God and believing that God has a purpose or whatever for you here and et cetera, psychologically is much better. It's uninteresting as well.
It depends. Like,
why?
It depends on what? Well, if you sin and like.
Well, it can be very stressful. But when I say uninteresting, I mean it's not challenging in terms of like, you're not asking, oh God, ridiculous thing. What the fuck is that bottle there? It's been really driving me crazy. Yes.
Hand sanitizer.
Oh my God. Okay. Anyway, so where was I? I've lost my train of thought. Yeah,
it's
so
not challenging.
It's not challenging because what do? You just believe that is it. You just have faith and that is all. And it's not, you're not challenging yourself. You don't ask questions. If something happens, you just think that's God's doing. You don't contemplate anything. So I think it can be quite boring, but I think it's more stable. And I wish that I could do that again. I really do. I really wish that I could wake up in the morning.
Can you put any conscious effort in moving that direction?
It won't work. It will not work. I've just gone too far from it, and I've learned too much different.
That proves my point about us having limited power over where we can go with our values.
I hope that the person watched the first one. Listen to the first one. No, but I personally, I don't think that I could. But it is possible. There is a possibility. It would take something to happen, like really something bizarre to happen to either stress me into deciding that that may be my only way out. But I wish I could. I think it would be just much more. I'd be happier.
Happier? What? Suicide. Mm-hmm. So I don't think anyone, I think most people or all people who commit suicide, it's not about choosing to die. It's about like escaping living, right?
Yeah.
It's impossible to choose, proactively choose to die. Like, I'm okay with living, but I prefer dying, you know? That doesn't happen, does it?
No, because nobody knows what dying feels like.
Yeah. There's nothing to look forward to.
Yeah, you can't make a choice to die. You just really get probably overwhelmed, or it's just tortured, and you just think there you have to escape it somehow. And it's like taking this leap of faith where you don't really know what the fuck is waiting for you, most likely nothing, but you're just better than whatever you are going through at that point. And it's a hell of a decision to make.
Is it? I feel like sometimes it's so easy
to escape life. I don't think so, because I think that I thought about like this whole concept, and I think that a lot of people have attachment to family, to people. And I think, because I've thought, what if I, you know, killed myself? And I think that my connection to my family wouldn't allow me to do it. And some people, I wouldn't feel it, but I'd consider what it feel. And in a large, in like big way, that stops me from doing anything. So it's just consider what. I'm not suicidal. I'm just saying, when I think about it, when I just consider the concept, I just think, interesting, what your family would feel, how much pain they would be in. And so I don't think it's an easy decision. I think that these people go through that consideration. They think about all of that, yet it's still so bad, whatever they're going through, that they feel they still have to make that decision. So I really think that I don't know, because I know a person who has committed suicide, but I don't know what they were going through personally. But I think it's not something that happens like, you know, immediately. I think they go through a lot of contemplation over it, and then they make this decision. So I don't think it's easy.
I think there is a lot of stuff going on before it, yes. But then you make this decision in the moment. And like, usually under some kind of distress, severe distress, and that makes it not easy.
It's difficult.
At that point, you do think about other people, but less than you would.
Yeah, because you're in a lot of pain, sure. But yeah, but I don't think it makes it easy, though.
Overcome, that can trump your considerations.
I don't know. Yeah, maybe. I don't know.
We see the fact is that a lot of people do commit suicide, right? Yeah. So it exists. So a minute of silence.
Sad.
Is it?
Yeah.
I don't know, but like, why death is sad?
Death is sad for me. It will always be sad for me, even if I've accepted that we have died. Because death, didn't we talk about this already? Okay, because happens with death is that it's just like we are not alone usually, and experiencing death is not sad for the person who dies, of course, but death is sad for everyone around them, because especially if someone has been a really big part of your life, a family member, and all your life you have known this person and you've been with this person, and the person dies. You've lost a huge part of your life that you will always remember, and you also have to just continue living with this person not being there. It's really painful. It's losing a part of you. And it's hard to go through that. And so for some people, death is always going to be sad, because someone dies and you're just supposed to continue. And also it reminds you of your own mortality when people close to you die. You realize you are going to die as well. When the person dies, you're supposed to continue living. Not as if nothing happened. You have to continue living. It's not like you can just wake up tomorrow and forget that the person existed. if it's a close family of yours, like family, you will remember all the time that this person existed. It'll become easier for you, sure. It'll become less sad or less painful, but you will remember there was a time that this person was always in your life. And now this person just simply does not exist. It is a very sad thing to me. And it's always going to be sad because it's a loss. It's a huge loss. It's a huge part of yourself going. And I don't think that I think I'll always be sad from a death. No matter how old the person is, no matter how, I don't know. I think it's always going to be sad to me.
And this is where we recommend our listeners to check out our episodes on death anxiety.
Right. The second episode.
Oh, you keep count.
We've done only two. We've released only two.
Do you consider yourself a moral relativist?
I don't consider myself anything.
You don't consider yourself anything?
No. You consider yourself a moral relativist?
Yes.
Why?
I mean, because we see that different people have different moral values.
So?
We see it on the level of cultures. We see it on the level of individuals. We even, on the individual level, I think I mentioned in the previous episode, like people change depending on their emotional state, on the social context. People change throughout the time, etc. So I don't see how anyone wouldn't accept that there is moral relativism, at least like on different levels.
Have you had anyone who said there isn't?
Yeah, actually, recently I was confronted with this argument that first, moral relativism is like easy. That moral relativism first is infantile because you don't have your own beliefs.
Oh, okay.
And I think that that is just not what moral relativism is about, because it doesn't say that you don't have beliefs. It just says that there are subjectives. Mm-hmm. So this is like nihilism. It says that you don't have any beliefs. But another argument was that it is the path of the lowest, what's the word? Like friction. So it's an easy way. Because you don't have to you don't have to argue your opinions, and that requires some emotional and like psychological effort.
I don't think that there are absolute values, like moral values, but I do function according to the objective values that my society has created, and I don't have a problem with it.
Objective in your
definition. In that definition of like majority.
But do you think that generally, like, the life of a moral relativist or like nihilist, is it easier in the way that in a society to navigate?
I don't know, because what do you then use as a reason for the things that you do, the decisions that you make, your choices? How do you explain them?
As a nihilist, I don't know, because I don't think it's possible. But as a relativist, you can say that you have your own beliefs. And like the way I explain them is, I don't know why they exist. Well, I don't know specifically why they exist, but I do know that it's just a product of my genetics and my culture as anything else. And it's very complicated things that I will never know for sure why I have this specific value. But why I like this thing and not the other thing.
You can see how people just think that's an easy way of escaping answering the question.
Answering what question?
Like a question of why, right? It's just like, I don't know. Yeah.
Well, yeah.
It can be seen as a cop-out.
But that's the truth. Because no one can answer it. Like, why do you have this belief? If you keep asking why, ultimately you will...
Find it?
No, you will either... There are two choices here. Either there will be circular reasoning.
You don't think that there is really... For whatever belief that you have accepted, you don't think that you could actually go down the path to find the origin of this belief?
I don't think so.
Really?
Like,
I don't think I've done it. Okay.
Origin in terms of like, personal history?
Personal history, like, okay. Basis.
No, I think it's very complicated. I don't think it's possible.
It is complicated, but I tend to believe that it is possible.
How do you know that? You don't know what happened. You don't remember the first year of your life. Yeah, you don't remember 99% of your life.
You don't actively remember 99% of your life, but you can actually try to recall things. I feel like, I tend to believe that it is possible, because when it comes to just behavior and me trying to figure out why I have certain behaviors and certain anxieties, for example, I've gone down this path of questioning to its source, and it has been possible. So I think, I know it's different things.
Yes.
But I feel like if that is possible, then maybe it is possible to find the root of your belief. I think
it's different, like anxiety and like trauma.
They are different.
It usually has trauma, and it's usually a specific event.
Yes, but they are different.
Negative, you remember it. With something not negative and like neutral, people don't remember that shit.
You could.
People don't remember neutral stuff.
No, I don't remember a lot of things, but like, first, I don't think that a lot of neutral things will be responsible for your beliefs right now.
No, I do think so. Like a lot of things, like the socialization that we have when we are kids. I don't know, like we have a lot of stuff that just was considered normal by our environment, and we just absorb it. And it was not emotional. We just took it for granted, took it as a set of values, and we just kept it. And that's it. And quite often, people never doubt it at any point of their life. Sometimes they start doubting some parts of it, they revise it, but 90% of it just sticks throughout your entire life.
Okay, let's try something. I want you to think back and think of the most neutral memory you can come up with when you were a child, from when you were a child.
I only have one memory, it is neutral, so.
What?
I'm running. I'm just running.
How old are you?
5 or 4? 5, maybe.
I remembered something, and then I remembered another thing, and I don't know if they are neutral, because one of them was the last day with one of my closest friends from primary school. I remember him leaving because he left on a school day, and I remember the last day at school, I said goodbye to him because his family was moving to another city, and we sent letters to each other for a while, but then we stopped. I remember his name, his first name. And I tried to search for him in a while before. But anyway, but that was the first memory that came to my mind. And the second one, maybe more neutral, is I remember the tree in my primary school. And I remember I used to stand there and watch things just happening around.
Okay.
Yeah, but I was thinking of what's the most neutral thing. But me standing there was part of me not engaging with people. So I don't think of it as a positive or a negative moment, but I wasn't just engaging with people because I was shy.
How's that related to values?
No, I'm just saying, like, I was thinking of how a neutral thing can actually affect your life. So,
I mean, everything affects your life.
So, this is my point.
But the thing is, you don't know for sure what contributed.
So, you said that neutral things can. I said that they can't.
I agree that they can.
So, okay. I'm trying to figure out if they can by trying to recall a very neutral memory and try to see if it can. I can draw any parallels to my current.
I think my argument was much better. Like that, the fact that you just go to school, for instance, and
I'm not disagreeing with you. I'm just trying to think if I could actually place like something that was not positive or negative, and find a way to draw a line to my current self. But even with traumas,
unless sometimes there is a very specific episode, but. Often, like, especially if it goes really deep into your childhood, you know that, okay, maybe this is it, but maybe it's not, because you also don't remember, again, 90% of it. So it's really like, I don't think you can know for sure. And the most honest answer is, I don't know where my values are coming from. I know some things that I kind of developed consciously. Mm-hmm. Here I can more like, historical record of like what I thought. I just have more memories, mm-hmm. what came from what. But even then, you can always dig deeper, and you will eventually you will hit the wall of just not remembering, and not only not remembering, also not understanding the biological component, like why did that event had this specific impact on your brain. You don't know what's happening, again coming back to the subconsciousness, you don't know what's happening there.
I mostly agree with you. I just think that there is space to be able to draw some kind of connection specifically. But I want us to move on to something as we maybe final thing about doing something you love. It's something that is very common in people are always saying you
thought should experiment.
Sorry?
Thought experiment.
What thought experiment?
I don't know.
Do you have
this
one?
Is something like okay, before you move there.
What?
Regarding moral relativism.
Okay.
I do not think it's an easy life, because if you're like really consistent with it, because for instance, if someone says that death or like killing is an absolute evil, if someone says that slavery is an absolute evil, I don't think it's that easy to like put yourself out there and say that, no, I think it is.
You're saying
culture.
Easy, you mean easy like other people are accepted?
Yeah, in the way that you will face a lot of social pressure.
Sure, okay, easy. I think maybe talk about easy as in with yourself. It's easy to just kind of live with yourself.
No, I think it was the argument, the point was more from the person I was talking about, that it's socially, you don't need to defend yourself.
No, that's not true. Socially, it's more difficult for someone to say, if someone says that killing is like objectively bad and someone else comes and says, well, not really. I think they'll stone that person to death.
Okay.
Okay, but doing something you love. It's very common. Yes, we'll round up with this. You're getting so restless, you're alcoholic. It's very common for people to say, you need to find the thing that you love and do it. And if you do the thing that you love, you will be happy or blah, blah, or your life will have meaning. Do you know what you love?
Actually, yes.
That's good. Do you want to share?
Finally. I think that the thing that brings me the most... also, it's kind of sound pretentious, so I don't know. I don't want to share
Why?
It.
Why? Go ahead. What
okay,
cares?
So I like connecting the dots. Like, I like learning and connecting the dots.
Okay, so why is this pretentious?
I don't know. I put it in the ways that sound less pretentious.
So do you do it mostly?
Sorry?
Do you do that most of your time then?
Part of my working and watching TV shows, yes.
No, but do you think that it improves, like it improves the, so to speak, value of your life when you do it?
I mean, the thing is, I think it's also about alternatives, right? You choose something that the best alternative, and this is the best alternative for me. Does it bring that much joy? I wouldn't say so, but I just haven't found anything better.
I don't know that I will ever know what I love doing. In terms of like something that I want to commit myself to doing for the rest of my life. I like learning, but I'm not in love with it. I don't know if it's possible to have that kind of like thing where people say, the way to be happy or the way to have value, etc., is to find something that you love doing and do it. I know that people find it, but I don't think it's possible for me.
It doesn't have to be one thing.
Yeah, whatever, many things. I like doing things, but I wouldn't call that I have such strong emotions towards these things.
Well, maybe you like not doing things.
No, I don't want to be not doing things either. So I decided to stop thinking about it. I decided to stop looking for my thing because I was just always thinking about what is my thing? What is the thing that I want to do? And sometimes I feel like I know it and I feel like, oh, this is it. Then I write it down and I contemplate later and I consider it and I try to draw it out and fully kind of put it out and see what it would look like. And I realize like this is interesting, but my emotions to it are not that strong.
But maybe you set a very high bar for it. So instead of asking what I want to do for the rest of my life.
You know, it's not just about the rest of my life. It's about what can I do next that will bring me this kind of feeling. It's not about the rest of
my life. Okay, don't think about a feeling because you already have a benchmark. Think about the best alternative. Like what will not get you like this benchmark really, really happiness, but like just the best alternative.
I don't know that I want to settle for that because I really want to. It's a very strange
settle,
thing.
But you don't have a choice.
No, because maybe it's not so strange, but I do feel like there are many people who live really authentically happy lives. I want to experience it. I don't want to settle. I don't want to be okay or just okay. I want to experience that feeling that these people have. So I want to do that. But every time I think about it, I don't think it exists. At least, I don't know. But, you know, I'm still alive. Part of the reason
I'm still alive. But you can still pursue your best alternative while still searching.
I mean, I do. Right now, I am pursuing my best alternative, okay. But it doesn't make me happy. It's just the best thing that I could be doing for now.
You hate it. I don't hate it.
It's not this. I don't hate it, but...
Oh my God, I'm experiencing such a huge deja vu right now.
Oh, okay, so I guess it's time for us to end.
That's what we did.
Really?
This deja vu.
Oh, okay. You want to say anything before we go?
Life is meaningless. Don't kill yourself.
Goodbye.